Okay, turn to Proverbs 11:24. I'm going to cover two verses tonight, Lord willing, and these go together. They're similar, teaching similar things. Proverbs 11:24, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. This is, I would say, a counterintuitive proverb. It's one that you wouldn't suspect to be the case, but if you've lived a while in this world, you know it is. Outside of the Bible just telling us that, we've probably experienced this. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth. Now let's define those terms. To scatter is to dissipate, squander goods or possessions. And this is not talking about squandering. Number four is to distribute to various positions, to place here or there at irregular intervals, to throw or send forth so that the particles are distributed or spread abroad, spread about, to sow or throw seed, money, etc., broadcast, to sprinkle, strew, to diffuse fragrance. So when you scatter, it's like what somebody that would do, especially if you're sowing like grass seed or something, where you just go out there and you just throw it and you try to cover a large area with it. That's what it is when you scatter. You're not necessarily picking each little place where every piece goes. You just kind of cast it out there and see what happens. And then it says yet. It says there is that scattereth and yet increaseth. Yet is an adverb and a conjunction, and it is used here as introducing an additional fact or circumstance which is adverse to or contrary of what would naturally be expected from that just mentioned. So let me read that again. Introducing an additional fact or circumstance which is adverse to or contrary of what would naturally be expected from that just mentioned. In spite of that, so it means in spite of that, for all that, nevertheless, notwithstanding. And that's why I said the proverb is counterintuitive, and the definition of yet tells us that the proverb is counterintuitive. We wouldn't expect this to be the case. If you go out and you just start scattering, you would expect to lose, right? The more you scatter, the less that's in your hand. And this verse is telling us that somebody that does that actually increases. So he's throwing it out there, and it's like never ending. It's just he's got a bigger pile in his bag every time he keeps scattering. To increase means to become great in size, amount, duration, or degree, to be enlarged, extended, or intensified, to wax or grow. So in other words, if we put the definitions in, those who distribute and spread about their money or goods will nevertheless, contrary to what would naturally be expected, grow in wealth. That's what this verse is teaching. Pretty interesting. If you think about it, just as seed is sown, or seed that is sown is not wasted, but rather it gives a good return, so it is with those who are generous toward those who are in need, or just toward people in general. It's really easy to understand when you think about sowing seed, because you take some seed and you sow it in the ground, and then you get back way more than you sowed, right? And it actually works the same way with giving to others. Matthew Henry had this to say. This was commenting on Job 27:11-23, and I heard this quote a long time ago, and I did a search for it in his commentary. And there's actually a couple of different places, and there's variations of this in his commentary. And you'll find that. You'll find some, he repeats himself throughout the commentary, but, you know, if you write six volumes and thousands of pages, you can probably do that. Or he may have forgot that he even said it in the first place, and then repeat, who knows. But anyway, he said, money is like manure, good for nothing if it be not spread. Which I thought was pretty fitting for this verse especially. So God sees to it that those who give to others are recompensed. And that's ultimately why this principle works. It wouldn't necessarily work if there wasn't a God in heaven seeing to it that those who give to others and supply the needs of others when they're in need, that they might not get paid back. If the universe really just came about by random chance and evolution, and, you know, people that do something like that are just idiots, because you have less to take care of yourself if you try to help out somebody else that's in need. If evolution's true, the best thing to do is to let that guy starve, because he's a bum anyway, right? And then that way you can get ahead, and you can take his house and whatever else that he just lost. But that's not the kind of world we live in. We live in a world where God sees things and God rewards based on people that do what he says. So let me just give you some verses here which show this principle. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. You think about that, in the animal kingdom, it doesn't really work this way, right? If a squirrel decided that he had a bunch of acorns and he just goes out and just starts casting them around for the other squirrels, he's going to starve during the winter time, right? Because the natural world just doesn't work like that. But the world in which God governs and with people does work like that. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10 says, "Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine." Same principle. You give to the Lord, and he gives back. Only he gives back more than you gave to him, because he says your barns will be filled with plenty, and the presses will burst out with new wine. The Lord told Israel this in Malachi 3, 8 through 10. So this principle holds true giving to the Lord, but it also holds true helping out other people that are in need, or just being generous in general. Just having a generous, liberal spirit to you. It just has a way of coming back. Malachi 3, 8 through 10, the Lord says, "Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. You're cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, and there shall not be room enough to receive it." And once again, the Lord says, I'll issue you a challenge. You give to me, and I'm going to give so much back to you, you're not going to know what to do with it all. Now, of course, you know, anybody that actually believed that promise would take the Lord up on it right away. Mm-hmm. If you didn't believe it, I guess you wouldn't take him up on it. But if you do, you'll find out that the Lord is true. Let's look at one more. Here's another example of the people of Israel. They needed to take up a collection for the temple. I don't remember the specifics. And when they took up the collection, and people were just giving very generously, and they just had more and to spare, they didn't even know what to do with it all. 2 Chronicles 31 and verse 10. "And Azariah, the chief priest of the house of Zadok, answered him and said, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have left plenty. For the Lord hath blessed his people, and that which is left is this great store." So they scattered and they increased. They gave to the Lord of their first fruits, and their barns were filled with plenty. They had plenty and to spare.
Is that the case when they told them to stop?
Because they had so much. I think this might have been. If it's not, there's another place very similar to it.
I would look later.
But then, like I said, this also applies to giving to the poor, to people that are in need. The Lord will see to it that if you give to the poor, that you won't lack. Proverbs 28 and verse 7. Now, of course, you want to be cautious giving to the poor, because what you can end up doing is enabling the poor, and so that they won't take care of themselves. So you don't want to harm somebody by trying to do something good for them. So that takes some discretion to figure out when to help and when not to help. And generally speaking, I'd say you help with the intention of getting somebody over the hump so that he can provide for himself. If he's fallen on hard times, it's like you bridge the gap. But you don't just keep helping him for the rest of his life, unless he's a quadriplegic or something and just can't do anything for himself. But you help him to get over the hump, right? That's truly helping somebody. Anything else is just giving him a crutch, and he's just going to hobble along the rest of his life and not actually be better off. That's the difference between private charities and government when they help. You know, it's been said with government that a couple of sayings that I like. You know, the government breaks your leg and then gives you a crutch and says, where would you be without me? You couldn't even walk if it wasn't for me, except they're the ones that broke the leg in the first place. But then the other one is that, you know, when government helps people out, they're really robbing from one person to give to another person. And it's like taking a blood transfusion out of your left arm to your right arm, but they spill half of it on the ground in the meantime, right? So it's a zero-sum game. They're taken from one and given to another, except they blow, you know, three-quarters of it on the bureaucracy. But that's not how private charities are typically set up to run, because they want to get people off of the doles, not get more people on the doles and keep them on the doles. The idea is to get them, you know, get them on their feet and get rid of them. Anyway, Proverbs 28 and verse 27 says, he that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. So we want to be careful when you see a person that's truly poor and truly needs help. Then we don't want to hide our eyes and be like, well, I didn't see that. You know, I walked by that guy. I didn't know, I didn't see him. The Lord knows if you saw him or not. But also, don't get on a guilt trip every time you drive past the bums on the street corner that are asking for money or food or something like that when there are, you know, 14 businesses within eye shot that are wanting to hire the guy and he won't work, right? So that's a different story. We're told in Psalm 112 and verse 9 that those who disperse to the poor will be honored. Psalm 112 and verse 9. It says, he hath dispersed. That's like scattereth, same kind of thing. He hath dispersed, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness endureth forever, his horn shall be exalted with honor. So the Lord will make sure that that person is not only taken care of, but that he's honored, that he gets maybe even public recognition, though he's not looking for it. You don't ever want to give looking for public recognition. And you don't want to do the old backdoor brags either, where you don't straight up say it, but you make sure people somehow, you know, read between the lines. The Lord will see to it that you're honored if you just do it quietly. We're told in Proverbs 19:17 that he that lends to the poor, it's as if you're lending to the Lord, because the Lord will insure the loan and pay it back with interest. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. That is, the him there is the Lord. The Lord pays him back. But you know what? Even if the Lord doesn't pay you back, Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And just giving and helping somebody out is a reward in and of itself, because it does feel good to help somebody out that needs it. But the Lord kind of doubly blesses you. You get the blessing of giving, and then you get the blessing of getting it back. This is not only an Old Testament teaching, but Paul taught in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 11, that those who sow bountifully will reap bountifully. When you scatter, you'll increase, and the more you scatter, the more you increase. This is what Paul is teaching us here. Now, of course, there is a limit to this, and I'll get into that too. Everything in the Bible usually has to be balanced. Because if you said, oh, well, if I scatter and I increase, and I scatter a little more and I'll increase more, I'll just scatter every single thing I own. Well, that's not going to work. Because there are other verses that say you're supposed to save, you're supposed to take care of your own, you're supposed to have laid up, right? So you can't take it to an extreme, obviously. But I'll talk about that here later. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 11. Paul says, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. So God gives in proportion. You sow sparingly, maybe you reap a little bit. You sow bountifully, you reap bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. You see, the Lord sees the heart, and if you're like prying that money out of your left hand with your right hand to give it to somebody else, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. I really want to spend this on myself. The Lord sees that, and he doesn't like that. He likes a cheerful giver, not one that does it grudgingly or just feels like, well, I have to. I know God says I have to do this, so I'll just do it. Well, God doesn't like that kind of thing. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. That verse sound familiar to you? That's a quote of the verse that we read there in Psalm 112:9. Same thing. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, that's God, ministers the seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, see, he's going to take care of you when you sow, and multiply your seed sown, he's going to increase what you've sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. So that verse, that passage there is pretty clear that if you scatter, you will increase. The Lord will take care of you. Some people might think, well, I don't have the wherewithal. I don't have the means to give to the Lord. And you know what? They're never going to have the wherewithal. They're never going to have the means, because these verses say that when you do that, the Lord then, you know, gives it back to you. And you'll notice that, or maybe you won't, but if you, because usually these are private things, but if you know, and I do, I have seen this over the years, because I'm in a position where I would, and I would know, I've seen it happen both ways. I've seen these verses come true, both aspects, sowing sparingly, reaping sparingly, sowing bountifully, reaping bountifully. I've seen it over and over and over and over again. I've experienced it in my own life, and I've seen it in the lives of others. I know these verses are true. Proverbs 11 and verse 25. Proverbs 11 and verse 25. It says, the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. Now we're going to get to that verse, Lord willing, here in a few minutes, yet tonight. But the liberal soul, and this is where words change meanings. In originally, liberal means somebody who gives bountifully, somebody who's generous. Now, liberal means somebody who's generous with other people's money, right? The lefties, you know, they're all about helping the poor with money that they steal from the rich, right? And that's not liberal. That's called a thief. But this is talking about somebody who's generous with his own money. He shall be made fat. He waters, he'll be watered himself. And then here's one of my favorites, Luke 6 and verse 38. That those who give to others will be given unto in abundance. Luke 6 and verse 38. Jesus said, some of the most beautiful words he ever uttered, there's plenty of them, but these are some of them. Give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. So meet is to measure something out. You meet it out, you measure it out. And he says here, in like four different ways, trying to get the point across, that when you give to others that are in need, it'll come back to you, because someday you'll be the one that's in need. Or maybe you won't even be in need. Maybe somebody will just do something really nice for you, like buy you a milk frother out of nowhere or something, just for no reason, right? Just because they wanted to be nice. Given, it shall be given unto you. Good measure. So a good measure, like that's a big, you know, big amount. Pressed down. It's like if you think about flour, that's probably the easiest way. You get a cup of flour, and if you want to get a full cup, right, you scoop it up and you press it down, and then shaken together. So you shake it so it fills in all the cracks and everything, right? And running over. Now that would be more like of liquid, but running over shall men give into your bosom. So he, like I said, in all these different ways, he's saying that it's going to come back to you in spades. And you see how the Lord repays? He says, shall men give into your bosom, right? The Lord will use other people to give into your bosom. Now, on the other hand, you have lazy people who covet and wish others would give to them. See, the righteous are the ones that are forward, that are generous to help out when they see a need. Lazy people are the one that just wishes they would be on the other side of that need. Like, why didn't anybody give me anything? Right? That's what lazy and covetous people do. Instead of getting to work and then keeping their eye open for an opportunity to help somebody else, they just have their hand out. They're always looking for something. And typically, I don't know about you, but when I see somebody that just has their hand out, that doesn't want to work, and expects somebody to give to them, I'm not really inclined to do that, right? And I don't think I'm alone. But on the other hand, you know, when you see somebody who is working hard and trying to make their way, and maybe they have fallen on hard times, there's a lot of people out there that would gladly help out that person. Proverbs 21:25-26. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. It's not that he doesn't want stuff, he just doesn't want to work for stuff. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. See, that he just sits there and he just wants, and thinks that everybody owes him everything, and the righteous, he just works, and then he has some left over to help other people out with. It's just a totally different mindset. And that's why, a lot of times, that's why poor people are poor. And that's why wealthy people are wealthy, because they have a totally different mindset of how they look at the world, how they look at things. Wealthy people typically don't think the world owes them anything. As a matter of fact, they can figure out a way to provide things for other people so that other people will gladly give them wealth because they've provided a good or a service for them. That's the way they look at the world. And then other people, like these people that we're reading about here, they look at it like, because I exist, somebody ought to be taking care of me. It's just a totally different mindset. Now, it may seem counterintuitive that those who give generously to others will grow in wealth rather than diminish in it, but it's true. And like I said, I've witnessed this with my own eyes many, many times over. And then let's look at the second half of the proverb. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. Now, this is the other side of it, and this is likewise counterintuitive, because you'd think, if you have $1,000 and you hold it all back, you're going to have more money than if you gave some of it away, right? I mean, that would just make sense to the natural mind, right? But this verse is telling us just the opposite. If you withhold more than is meet, you're going to actually tend to poverty. And I'll give you some examples in a little bit here of practically how this can happen. But let's first define the terms. To withhold. To withhold is to keep from doing something, to keep in check or under restraint, to hold back, restrain. It's to keep back, to keep in one's possession what belongs to, is due to, or is desired by another. To refrain from giving, granting, or allowing. And that second definition would be the particular application to this verse, withholdeth more than is meet. The idea being that there is an amount that is meet or that is suitable to give, and whether it's, I mean, it could actually be owed to somebody, or it could just be that it would be the right thing to do, right? So if you hold back, in that case, it'll actually tend to poverty. Meet is, this is M-E-E-T, is having the proper dimensions made to fit. It's suitable, fit, proper, for some purpose or occasion. Expressed or implied. Like when the Lord told Adam that he would make a help meet for him, a help suitable, somebody, the woman in that case, his wife, Eve, somebody that would be suited to his needs to help him. It says, there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but tendeth to poverty. To tend is to direct one's course, make one's way, move or proceed towards something. It's also to have a specified result, if allowed to act, to lead or conduce to some state or condition. And I included that number three definition because it cites the Geneva Bible, Proverbs 10:16, the labor of the righteous tendeth to life, which is referring to, you know, the same kind of tending as this verse is. And then poverty is the condition of having little or no wealth or material possessions, indigence, destitution, want, in various degrees. So if we put the definitions into the verse, we see that, in other words, those who keep back for themselves more than is suitable and proper will direct their lives toward having little or no wealth or material possessions. And once again, just like people that are generous and the Lord works it out so that it comes back to them, people that are stingy, I think the Lord also works it out so it that their wealth just kind of, it's like they have holes in their pockets. You know, it just disappears. Because the Lord has a way of doing that, right? I mean, car breaks down, you got $1,000 bill. Well, there goes a lot of that wealth you were withholding that you could have used to help some poor guy out that really was in need. You know, the Lord has ways of taking care of things like that. Now, this verse is not telling us to give away everything and keep nothing for ourselves. If you'll notice there, it says he withholdeth more than his meat. Right, so withholding some is not only acceptable, it's a downright commandment. You have to withhold some of your wealth for yourself, or you are breaking other commandments, like not providing for your own family and things like that. So the idea of some of these monks where they would take a vow of poverty and just divest themselves of everything that they own, that's not biblical. That's not scriptural. And furthermore, if you do that, you still got to eat. So ultimately, they're living off of somebody at the monastery. The monastery's paying for it. And I mean, some poor guy's out there working and you know, picking up the tab. So there's no such thing as taking an utter vow of poverty, because you wouldn't live more than a couple of weeks because you'd starve, right? You wouldn't have any food. Right. So it's suitable to withhold some of our substance for ourselves. Like I said, Christians are commanded to save and lay up for the future and also to provide for themselves and their families. Let's just look at Proverbs 21 and verse 20 to begin with. It says, there is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. So the person that just spends everything is not virtuous, he's not liberal, he's actually stupid, right? You don't want to spend everything. You want to save and lay up. You want to have some treasure in your house for, you know, when evil times come and things like that. Proverbs 15 and verse 6. In the house of the righteous is much treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. See, it's not wrong to have treasure in your house, right? That obviously means that this man didn't scatter everything, right? He scattered some, and apparently he scattered some, and then the Lord gave him a bunch more, and he's got treasure in his house. But he didn't get rid of everything. Because, like I said, we're to provide for our families, and if we don't, we're worse than an infidel. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith, and is worse than an infidel. So the man who is Mr. Super Spiritual and just decided to give away everything that he had to the poor when he's got five kids to feed, he's not Mr. Super Spiritual, he's an infidel. He's like worse than an unbeliever. You need to take care of your own before you can take care of the poor around you, right? We're told that, so first of all, it would be wrong to give away everything, right? Because you couldn't provide for yourself. But it would also be an error to give away almost everything to where you just have bare subsistence and you're just living out the miserable life where you're getting just enough caloric intake to keep yourself alive. That would also be an error, because God hath given us richly all things to enjoy. And enjoying some of the fruit of our labor is the gift of God. Let's look at 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. 1 Timothy 6:17. Paul says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Well, that there means that it's okay to enjoy some of the fruit of your labor, right? We have to have things in balance. Mm-hmm. Enjoy some of it, save some of it, give some of it to others, mm-hmm. right? So there needs to be a balance in life. Solomon told us that there's nothing better than to enjoy the fruit of our labor. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. Ecclesiastes 2:24, there's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. It's such a blessing that God has given us enough means to have more than we absolutely need to survive, but we have extra. I mean, pretty much all of us do in this country. We all have a little bit of extra, and that's a gift from God. And there's lots of people in this world that don't have that. There's lots of people in this world that live in abject poverty, millions of them, billions of them probably. And we're very, very blessed in this country in many ways. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 13, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. And then Solomon was really, really hammering this one down because he said it three times in Ecclesiastes 5:18. He says, behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. So even Solomon, in this state that he was wearing like dark glasses and seeing everything very dark colored and everything's vanity, life is vanity, even he recognizes in that state it's a good thing to enjoy the fruit of your labor that God's given you. So withholding wealth for our own needs and enjoyment is not wrong, but withholding more than is suitable is wrong. That's where you get into trouble, and that's where it's, when it tends to poverty. Remember what we read there in 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 7, that every man should purpose in his heart how much he should give to the Lord and to others. Mm-hmm. 2 Corinthians 2 Corinthians 9, just read this verse again, these verses 6 through 7. But I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly, or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. So a man has to decide what is suitable and fitting to give, and he should do it cheerfully, not grudgingly. And if he withholds more than his meat, and sows sparingly, then he's going to reap sparingly. And that's what the verse is teaching. You withhold more than his meat, you will tend to poverty. You will reap sparingly. So withholding more than his meat tends to poverty, like I said. And just as God blesses those who are generous, he also punishes those who are covetous, stingy, cheap, and miserly. Those who sow much for themselves, that is S-O-W, those who sow much for themselves, but none or little for God and his work, will be brought to poverty through God's judgment. Let's look at a few verses here. Haggai 1, 4 through 11. Haggai 4, 1 through 11. And you know, despite all of the bad things about this country. Haggai 1, 4 through 11. Despite all the problems and debauchery in this country is still, I think, the most generous country on earth. And I'm assuming that those numbers are based on what people put down on their taxes for tax-deductible giving. Or maybe they are to organizations that report, you know, giving, you know, charitable giving or something. I'm guessing that's where the government gets the numbers. And if that's true, then there's actually even way more charitable giving, because there's a lot of giving that goes on that is not put down in tax forms, that doesn't go to these organizations that do the reporting and all that. So this country is a very generous country. Even in this spiritual dearth that we're in, even now this country is generous, which might have something to do with why this country is wealthy also, because these very principles are true. Haggai 1, 4 through 11. The Lord says, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses?" Sealed is having an interior roof or walls overlaid or lined with wood, wainscoted, so like very nice, fancy, nice houses. "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste?" He's talking about the temple that was supposed to be being rebuilt. And when they went back to Jerusalem, they started working on their own houses, and they forgot all about God's house. And the Lord wasn't happy about that. "Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountains and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith the Lord of hosts? Because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands." So the Lord brought a drought, because they were taking care of themselves and not taking care of his house, of his things. These similar times, this would have been a little bit afterwards. This is after the house of God's been rebuilt. This is pretty much the last thing that we read about Israel before the period where things went dark, that 400-year period before the New Testament. And things had gotten very bad. It didn't take Israel long to fall off the wagon, because when they went back to Babylon, or went back from Babylon to Jerusalem, and they rebuilt the temple, and they were really doing well for a while, and it didn't take long for things to turn around. In Malachi 1 and verse 8, the Lord says, "And if ye offer the blind for sacrifices, is it not evil? And if ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee and accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts?" So they were just giving the Lord just the refuse, just whatever's left over. What they didn't want wasn't any good for anything, and the Lord did not appreciate that. He told them that they'd robbed him in tithes and offerings. We already read that there in Malachi 3, 8 through 9. And then one more in Hosea 2, 8 through 9. "You withhold more than is meet, and it tends to poverty." You know, the Lord said they, in Haggai, they brought it home and put it into a bag with holes. It was just like, where is it all going? We're bringing in, and it just seems like we can't ever get ahead. Withhold more than meat tends to poverty. Hosea, that's after Daniel. Let's see here. Hosea 2, 8 through 9. "For she did not know that I gave her corn," this is the Lord speaking about Israel, "and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold." He blessed them with abundance of wealth, "which they prepared for Baal." You believe that? God gave them all that, and what did they do? Sacrifice it to Baal. "Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and I will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness." The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. He's like, you're going to give it to Baal, I'm going to take it back. You withhold more than is meat from me, and you're going to tend to poverty, the Lord says.
He's calling it his corn and his wine. Everything that we give him is his anyway.
Yeah, that's right. There's a place, I think it's in the Bible. I know in the church that I grew up in, they would often offer the prayer when they would do the giving. And they'd say something like, "Lord, we've given thee of thine own," or something. And I'm almost positive back. I forget where it is.
Of thine own have we given thee.
It's back there in the Chronicles, I think. But that's very true. Anything that we have, it's the Lord's to begin with anyway. And Jesus taught this principle by way of a parable when the man was increased with goods and he wasn't rich toward God and he ended up dying and dying early as a result. We've been over this before in Luke 12 where he says, you know, what shall I do? I'll pull down my barns, I'll build greater barns, and then I'll say to my soul, soul, thou hast goods laid up for many years. Eat, drink, and be merry. And then the Lord says, thou fool, this night thy life shall be required of thee. And he says, so is it with he that is layeth up for himself and is not rich toward God. So the man's problem wasn't that he was laying up riches, it was that he wasn't rich toward God. He withheld more than was meet. Now, let's look at, I told you I would give you some examples, let's look at some other ways in which a man can withhold more than his meat and tend to poverty. Okay, so it's not just giving to the Lord, it could be many other things. For instance, a man could save every penny and not provide what is needful for his family. He'd just make them go without things that are needful just because he's such a miser. That could end up tending to poverty. I mean, that is poverty by definition. You know, if you have $1 million in the bank and barely enough, you barely allot yourself enough to eat every day, you know you're impoverished, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you are by definition impoverished, even though you may have access to a lot of money. If you don't use it to provide for your basic needs, you are in poverty. A man could make his family go without reasonable things that would make their lives more comfortable. Basically, you could make your family live like they're in a third world country and not have air conditioning in Missouri and not have running water and things like that, right? Well, if you live like that, well, you're basically impoverished, right? You tend to poverty. He could refuse to spend money to maintain his house, his cars, his equipment, which in the long run will cause him greater financial loss. Right? He's so tight he won't put a new roof on the house. Well, how long is that going to last before he's going to have to put new rafters in and new ceilings and new everything else, right? So somebody that won't spend any money to maintain anything will end up tending to poverty. He could always buy the cheapest goods possible. The cheapest tools, the cheapest equipment, the cheapest parts, the cheapest furniture, the cheapest appliances, the cheapest computers, the cheapest everything that he uses. It's the cheapest thing he could possibly find, which in the long run will end up costing him more. And I've seen this happen. I've seen this happen time and again. Cheap tools is a great way to go broke if you need them. I'll jump ahead here. My dad said, a rich man can afford anything, but a poor man can only afford the best. Now, a lot of people think, well, that doesn't make any sense, but it's true, because a rich man can afford to have junk tools that break, and then he can afford to run to the store to get another one. He can afford to have junk sockets that round off bolts that now are going to take a whole lot more work, and he's going to have to ship his car off to a mechanic somewhere and have it towed to have that bolt extracted because he had some cheap junk tools that ruined the bolt. A rich guy can afford all that. A poor man can't. A poor man can only afford to have the best tools, or at least sufficient tools that are going to actually work and accomplish the task. But I remember, for instance, when I was in Minneapolis, one of the families up there, their couch was old, and the mother-in-law bought them a new couch, probably one of these cheap pieces of junk, couple hundred, $300 things or whatever. I don't know what it was. But anyway, when they first got it, it was, you know, the cushions were nice and stiff and everything. That thing didn't last like a year, and they literally threw it away. It was just a piece of junk, right? And so, yeah. So you think, oh, that'll save money. Well, not in the long run, it won't. Compare that with the recliner chair that I bought like 8 or 9 years ago for $1,400, which people would say, that's crazy, especially somebody that's tight like you. But guess what? That thing still's like brand new. Yeah. It's the most comfortable chair in the world, and I absolutely love it, and I've gotten tons of enjoyment out of it, and it'll probably last another 20 years. Right? So it's, in my mind anyway, worth it to spend money on decent stuff that will last, that you're not constantly replacing.
Your friend got an enjoyment out of it, too.
Oh, yeah, sure. Or like computers, I 12 years ago, I bought this Dell computer, just finally had to replace it. But 12 years is an amazing amount of time for a computer. And I didn't buy the most high-end thing. I didn't spend like $3,000 on it, but I spent like $1,000 on it when I could have probably spent $200 or $300 on a cheap one. That thing lasted 12 years. If I had spent $200 or $300, I'd have probably bought two or three of them in that same amount of time and probably spent the same amount of money over the course of time and had who knows how much frustration, the thing crashes or it breaks, it's just all that stuff, right? And so it's worth it, I think. And I bought another one, you know, in that same price range, and I'm hoping to get another 10 or 12 years out of it. It just makes sense to buy decent stuff, especially if it's your livelihood or your job or something like that. I had a friend where I used to work in Ohio, and he told me, I never forgot this, he said to invest in yourself. The guy had bought himself a 30-inch monitor for work. You know, most people might buy that for their own home use or something. Right. He bought it for work, and it was in his office there. And I'm like, man, that was like a $1,000 monitor or something for work. And he said, you got to invest in yourself, because he wanted to be as productive as possible. He was a great engineer. He was a great employee. And that always stuck in my head. I mean, that makes sense, because most people won't spend two pennies for anything at work. If their company doesn't buy it, they won't buy it. They wouldn't buy themselves an eraser. I mean, they'd sit there and, you know, spit on it or something, try to rub it off before they buy themselves an eraser. This guy spent $1,000 on a monitor because he wanted to be as productive as possible. Wow. Or here's another one. A business owner could refuse to invest in labor and time-saving equipment and technology or in high-skilled, high-paid workers for his business, which will diminish his profits in the long run. He could just be too tight to invest in equipment that would make his production more efficient, mm-hmm. or invest in high-skilled employees mm-hmm. that also cost a lot to pay, but that would make him more money in the long run. Instead of paying a competent employee $75,000 per year and retaining him, a foolish employer will withhold more than his meat, and he'll only pay that guy $50,000 a year. And you know what happens? He soon ends up losing him to a wiser employer who's willing to pay the guy $100,000 a year, right? Now the foolish employer is going to have to spend far more than the $75,000 to get a comparable employee, because the going rate in the market, or at least the high-paying companies and the smart companies, are paying $100,000. This guy was paying 50. If he'd have paid 75, he'd have kept the guy. The guy wouldn't have been looking around if he'd have been paying him 75. Now guess what? He's not going to be able to hire somebody for 75 because these other companies are paying 100. So now he's going to have to pay 85 or 90 when he could have been paying 75. If he wouldn't have been stingy and only paying 50, right? So, and that happens all the time. Companies are dumb like that all the time. They figure, oh, they'll stay, and then they don't stay. And it costs way more to hire somebody else, and then you have the learning curve to get them up to speed and all that. If you can afford to pay well, it makes a lot of sense to do so. And it's good for your employees, makes them happy, keeps them happy, they're more productive that way. So in either case, this guy's stinginess tends to poverty. I like what Matthew Henry said. This is commenting on this verse, Proverbs 11 and verse 24. He said, it is possible a man may grow poor by meanly sparing what he has, withholding more than his meat, not paying just debts, not relieving the poor, not providing what is convenient for the family, not allowing necessary expenses for the preservation of the goods. This tends to poverty. It cramps men's ingenuity and industry, weakens their interest, destroys their credit, and forfeits the blessing of God. And let men be ever so saving of what they have, if God blast it and blow upon it, it comes to nothing. A fire not blown shall consume it. Haggai 1:6 and Haggai 1:9. So I thought that was well said. And he's right there. It cramps ingenuity and industry. You know, when you're so tight that you won't even invest in something else that would make you more productive, then you just shut your doors to all kinds of other opportunities and improvements. All right, so that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 24. Remember, you scatter, you increase. You withhold more than is meat, you'll tend to poverty.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.